Hey, everybody.
Hey, hey, hey. Hey, TV people. Trailer Park Troubadour. We want to shed that light on the person that's still in active addiction, that's wanting to get clean. You know, that person that that thinks that he has no way out. You know what I mean? That person that that has got 3 days clean and feels like that his life is over because now he's got to try to be a better person, but all he knows right. is that raw deal, you know, because right. that's who we are, is that raw deal.
Now this world's gone crazy, trying to take me with it. I camouflage my thoughts behind this real tree fitted. Never could admit it, guess that's why I quit it. Boy, I messed around and got addicted. Now this world's gone crazy, trying to take me with it. I camouflage my thoughts behind this real tree fitted. Never could admit it, guess that's why I quit it. Boy, I messed around and got addicted.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Most High Show. Today we have a special guest. Dim Halo is in the studio. What? Give a round of applause for Dim Halo in the building. Dim Halo is Dave, otherwise known as Scoob. And Jonathan, otherwise known as Johnny Riot.
That's right.
So they met at a 12-step campout, immediately bonding over their shared interest in music, rhyming, and rap. 2 years ago, karaoke, there's a story there, helped formulate this rap duo with their self-titled second album coming next summer. Welcome, Dim Halo. Hey. All right, Dim Halo.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
All right, what's up with this karaoke? What happened to karaoke?
I'm activities chair for the Gap area.
Okay.
And last year, we had put on a open mic night for our New Year's Eve dance, right? So this is Dave got up there. You know, he had done, what was it?
I did House of Pain Jump Around.
Yeah. Damn.
And absolutely.
Killed it?
No.
Oh.
I messed up twice. And then I just said, hey, stop. And I freestyled.
Oh.
And I ended up winning
yeah.
because oh. of the freestyle.
Right. Okay.
Right after the judge. Freestyle, he hopped up there and was like, hey, man, I'll rap too.
Yeah, I can rap.
And then he did let the freestyle go. And that's yeah.
how that's how y'all connected.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Pretty all right.
much. Yeah.
Now, both of y'all are in recovery.
Correct. Yeah.
And so what's that? Let's just talk about time a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So, Scoob, how much clean time you got?
So I've got... I just celebrated a year, October 17th.
Hey, hey. 1 year, yeah.
That's awesome.
And Johnny?
4 years, June 19th.
Yeah. All right. Now, Scoob, we were talking, and I was trying not to talk because
right.
the pre-conversation sometimes like ruins yeah. this conversation.
Sure.
But we dove right in. So you say you got a year, but you said this ain't your first time.
Correct.
Doing that.
Correct.
You want to just tell me, just kind of run your story real quick.
Yeah. So I moved to South Carolina. I'm originally from St. Louis. I moved to South Carolina in 2013. And through a series of poor choices, I slipped, tripped, and fell into recovery. Somebody was like, man, you need to go to a meeting. So I went to a meeting not to get kicked out of the house I was at. And then did 9 months. Relapse, 3 years, relapse, stayed out for 2 years, did 3 years again after going to my first rehab, and relapsed one more time, and now I've got a year. So it took me 10 years to get one.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you've heard this. I'm sure people ask you this, like, what's different about this one here? What, is there something that you feel is different about
Absolutely.
Right now?
Like, so whenever... all right, if it was a hot day, it didn't matter. Like, I knew I wasn't supposed to, but I would fantasize, man, you know, beer sounds good. Mm. Or if there was any kind of, like, atmosphere of going out with friends, you know,
You have the whiskey trap door.
Water.
You have
that. Sounds classy. You know, yeah. It no longer does. I just know that I'm a failed drug user, alcoholic addict. You know what I mean? Like, I just, it's, I can't. If I choose to live, like, that's seated in me. Now, it's like, if I choose to live, I can't use, I can't drink, I can't, like, I've got a housefly lives 10 years, a Great Dane lives 7 years, or a housefly lives 10 days, a Great Dane lives 7 years, an average human male lives 75 years. So I've got till 2054, God willing, for the average lifespan if I haven't damaged that. So I'm just trying to live that out.
Yeah, amen. Yeah. So my buddy Dean says there's a trap door in the back.
Yeah.
And everyone keeps that, tries to keep that trap door open. And well, maybe if I just whiskey and water, or just beer on a cold, hot day, or just a little cocaine, you know what I mean?
It's just a little cocaine.
Just a little cocaine.
Friends, you know,
just with friends.
Right.
Yeah. Just with, you know, just with close friends.
Right.
You
know,
well, I won't use with
no outsiders.
Yeah, no outsiders. But once you close that trap door, you realize, okay, this is not an option, a way that you won't live anymore.
Right. And all right. So, through being on Planet Recovery for 10 years, I've looked at what it's given me, this connection with something greater than myself and a life. You know, I always thought it was BS whenever people would say, I've got a life second to none. You know, and I'm sitting here like, you know, going through the motions of growing in recovery, but I really do. I have a life second to none, warts and all.
Yeah.
And I've got this connection to something greater than myself that, why would I piss on that again?
Yeah.
Like, I feel connected and in rhythm with all of this.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to do that again.
All right.
That's right.
Mr. Riot?
Yeah. For me, I first got clean in 2017 because I had a son through a previous relationship, and he was growing up, you know, and I had nothing to do with him, basically. So when my wife was pregnant with my daughter, and she's six now, when she was pregnant with her, I remember saying, you know, she told me I needed to get clean or she was going to leave me, right? Mm. So we started going to church. I was lying to the preacher, doing all these different things. I'd show up, you know, three sheets to the wind. Yeah, man, I'm clean. I want to get baptized today. You know what I mean? And then I remember they were preaching on Hebrews, and he had talked about if you need to go out and cut some wood, right? Because that's when they were lost in the wilderness.
Okay.
And I was like, man, I need to go cut some wood. And so I run up the aisles, like snot pouring. I'm crying. I want to know how to be a man. Please tell me how to be a man. You know, and I went to a rehab then. That's where I wrote the hook to Addicted. And then, you know, I was right at about 2 years. And we went down to Hilton Head, I think it was, on a vacation. And we decided, you know, different area codes, we can drink a beer. So I'm drinking, I'm out there in a little hot tub, you know, and then, like, as soon as I got that warm feeling in my gut, you know, like, I wasn't even drunk or anything, but I was like, man, I'm screwed up. So I poured the beer out, called my sponsor, you know, and then picked up a white chip, and then that was in June 18th. And
okay. So. All right. So you felt when you put that alcohol on you, you felt like, okay, this
immediate ain't, conviction.
Yeah. Yeah. What's what they say to ruin your drinking, right?
Yeah.
You ever heard that? The rooms will ruin your drinking and using, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, now you can't have fun. Now you can't even do that.
Yeah.
Right.
But you can rap.
That's it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ain't no rules about that. Yeah.
Put that pain into passion, you know what I mean?
I wish they would put a rule on this.
Right.
You guys are out. You guys are on Spotify.
Yeah, yep. We're on all major outlets.
All major.
Epidemic, is that it?
Yep.
Yeah.
That's the 2022 album.
Correct.
Yes.
It might be Good Man be the one that I was.
Yeah, Good Man is about, you know, growing up in fatherless homes and trying to be, you know, better men today. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So therefore the hook, you know, what's it mean to be a good man?
Yeah.
Yeah. The worry, the pain, the guilt, the shame. What's it mean to be a good man? Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
So both of you grew up without fathers in the home?
Well, my dad and my mom, they split up when I was five. I remember my dad my mom and my dad would fight all the time. You know, I remember one time he had pushed her through a window, and So I decided then that I was going to be the man of the house, you know, and I told my mom, you know, you need to get a divorce and all this different stuff. I'm the only man you need in your life. And pretty much, you know, my dad would come see me every now and then, you know, when it was convenient for him. He's saved now. He's, you know, he's clean now. He's so we have a great relationship, but it didn't begin until I was 30, you know, because and he got clean when I was probably like 16 or 17. And my mom had kicked me out to go live with him. And he had tried, you know, he was had that jailhouse religion is what I called it. So because he had fresh out of prison, you know, wanted to cram the God down my throat, you know what I mean? And then I was rebelling real hard. So as soon as I lived with him about a year, and then I moved out, went off on my own thing, you know?
Yeah. Is that what's in the song?
Yeah.
Do you know the verse?
Yeah, I say, you know, it's like fuck, fight, fall, kiss, cut, kill. You know what I mean? It's hard growing up.
The ounce of dope.
Yeah.
Come on, you got it. You got it. Come on, dog.
Went looking for hope.
But all I found was a pistol and an ounce of dope. Yeah. You know what I mean? Because I was looking for, trying to fill that hole in my heart.
Went looking for hope, but all I found was a pistol and an ounce of dope.
Yeah.
And that's real life.
Yeah, that's real life, yeah. Because I remember...
What were you looking for? When you say you're looking for hope, what were you looking for?
I mean, I was trying to fill that void because I had ran for... I'm used to running, you know what I mean? I ran from my dad trying to get back into my life. Every relationship I'd had, you know, I'd put... Basically, I'd put my hands on the woman, you know? I'd put my hands on my friends. I thought that I had to fight to be a man, right? Because that's... The little bit of time that I had with my dad when I was younger, you know, that's what was instilled in me. You know, that's not what he was trying to teach me, but that was what I learned, basically. So when I went looking for hope, you know, I tried to find something more to life. You know, I was always looking. That's where I came into art so hard, you know, like trying to put that pain into my passion. But basically, the art brought the women, brought the drugs, you know what I mean? And then I was addicted to the fast life, you know? So when I went looking for something more, I found it. It was the opposite side of what I was really wanting.
Yeah. And what about for you?
So I was raised by a single mother. My parents got divorced when they was 12, or when I was 2. I didn't meet my dad until either like between 10 and 12, I don't know, something like that. I didn't meet him for a long time.
He's looking off at his wife. Is that what you're looking at?
Yeah, looking at my wife. Because, well, see, here's the thing, is I went to 14 different schools before I graduated. I mean, Mama was a Rolling Stone. The thing is, and a lot of my memories, like, kind of get just jumbled together. Like, I really don't, like, dates, years, or whatever kind of, but, so, with my mother, it's not good to speak poorly of the dead. Mm. But a truth is a truth. And so her boyfriends were highly abusive. And then when I got the opportunity to meet my father, I was like, my dad's going to save me. You know what I mean? Type of deal. Moved in with him, and he turned out to be one of the worst abusers I've ever encountered. And so like that good man. So all these tragic stories of men in my life, including my father.
Yeah.
I'm trying to turn that leaf. I'm trying to break that cycle.
Now, you know that verse? Can you do that verse for us?
God, I'm feeling lost and all amassing is a break pump. Hands clasped with a sad look up. I don't want to feel today.
Contemplate
the hookup. But it seems the thoughts only passing. Older generations seem to come off so classy. Nothing but a different age of trash, it seems. I'm trying to be a better version of the person popping up from my past. Better man status is the goal that I have. What does it mean to be a good man? A good one. Man, that is. Seems it isn't with the alcohol or other substances. Never put your hands on a woman and kids. That puts you in a lower class pieces of shit. I'm trying to be a provider, rise above the negative, and increase the resonance. My presence is requested, not deflected, when the stress of life hits. Knowledge, wisdom, and understanding.
Man came prepared.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dog.
So.
Yeah.
we both try and lay our experiences into the verses. That's why, you know, like, it comes off gutter because we've lived a lot of
gutter life,
gutter tragedy, really. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, and with recovery, we wanted to fold this new way of living into the music, but retain
the realness,
who we are,
our roots. Yeah. Trailer Park Troubadour.
Tangerine pterodactyl. A flippant flamingo. So this self-expression, so tell me about that in recovery. Were you always writing raps? Were you always writing music? Or did you lose it when you first got sober? Or has this always been a creative form of it? It's like just something that had to get out.
Well, I'll start us off.
Okay.
Basically, whenever I first got clean, I felt like God was wanting to put me on a different journey, and towards the end of my using, I couldn't even write a song anymore. You know, me and Dave was talking about that the other day. Like, when I was at the end of my using, you know, my brain was so jumbled up, I'd be sitting over there scribbling on paper, and then being just a mess of nothing. But after I got clean, you know, and that my head got cleared, like, I had wrote little songs here and there, but I had no catalyst, basically. Like, me and when I met Dave, you know, it's like the flame was lit again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember trying to write rhymes on meth, and I'd get ahead of myself.
Right, that was me, bro.
The homie's like, yeah, you might want to go back to the script on that one, dude. Work that well.
Right. Hang on, I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about for you? Was that process getting clean and kind of?
So, I've always, like, art is at my core as a human being. I've always drawn or painted or wherever I went. You know, I tried to go to college. You know, that old number. Mm-hmm. So, I went to junior college, and then I got the opportunity to go to the Art Institute and fuck that all up. So that's what I was telling Kale the other day was whenever I got clean, my first sponsor, you know, he's like, we get the opportunity to chase our dreams or whatever. So I began writing bars again and began doing music again, along with other creative outlets, you know, like painting and all that, you know, wood carvings and stuff like that. Like, art is at my core, and recovery gave me the opportunity, like we were talking, like Jonathan said, with the scribble. It's all misguided. Like, you want to do everything all at once and expect it to make sense to people.
Right.
Whereas recovery, you've got this focus where you can hone your art and say what you want to say, or paint what you want to paint, or however that comes out.
Well, and the actual act of creating is a cathartic experience now, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
It's a way for you to connect with yourself, with your higher power, because there's something, you know, I know, like, my creative process, I always feel like I'm just pulling stuff out of the air. You know, it's very instinctual. There's not like a real good formula, you know, for it.
Right. Well, like I was saying, like, where you trying to do all this at once and expect it to make sense to people, recovery, like, gives you this opportunity to be with rap. I can say what's on my heart. I can say what I feel. I can say what they said to me when I first came into the rooms.
Right, and make it authentic.
And make it authentic, you know what I mean? Give back what was so freely given to us through art.
Yeah, yeah. And you don't have the guilt and the shame of your past, right? Because you've reconciled your past.
That's right.
You've come to terms with it. You've cleaned up the wreckage of it.
That's right.
So now when you write about your past, you can write about it kind of more clearly. And
speak
more,
your truth.
You can speak the truth.
Yeah, clean slate.
Where it's like when the guilt and shame cycle of constantly using and breaking your promise and going back and doing shit you just said you would never do, it's hard to speak. You don't even know what's true, right?
Right. Like,
yeah.
I know me and Dave was talking about the other day about when you invite God in, or our creator, you know, when you invite him in, then you get, it's like muses, like they speak to you, you know what I mean? And then that's how I feel a lot of my songs that I've written have all been, it's never really necessarily me, but something like almost, it sounds crazy, but like divine intervention. Like it's meant, yeah. I got to write this down because, yeah. you know, it's drawing so, it's so much on my heart. You know, I got to put it down on paper.
Yeah. Then you got to make it dope.
Right. Yeah. You got to make it hard.
Yeah.
Right.
Cook it up, cut it up.
So that kind of leads into this, which is that, you know, that kind of concept of I'm a better driver when I'm drunk. Mm. I'm more creative when I'm high. Those are things that I've heard. And I thought that too, you know what I mean? I thought, you know, cocaine right. made me better making beats, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we kind of covered that. Let me move on, sorry.
That's good. Yeah, like I used to think that it made me better, any yeah. of it. Yeah, like yeah. any kind of substance would yeah. be like, you know.
I can't write till I get a blunt.
I can't write till I get that, that, that. Yeah, right. like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His mic's loud enough there, Kale?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Real quick, just before we leave that, it just popped in my head. Somebody in recovery once said, why do you need a substance? It's already in you.
Yeah.
Meditate or something to that effect to right. find a way to release it outside of a substance.
Well, yeah, I mean, every substance that we ingest, the only reason why there's a chemical reaction within us is because that a version of that molecular thing exists in us.
Right.
Like opiates, like THC, all those things, that right. they already exist within us. That's what the chemical is just creating that reaction.
Right.
It's like if you talk to most people who were addicted to meth, they were diagnosed with ADD and ADHD when they were younger, you know, and then I was just going to go ahead and say it. You know, I feel like the big pharma, you know, and stuff like that, like whenever they were introducing us to things like Ritalin and Adderall, that kind of jump started like what you were just talking about with something inside of us that made us crave that, you know, because it helped us focus and become better.
Well, that's the thing. I always felt like one of the main things that cocaine and meth did for me was it just quieted my head.
Yeah.
Right.
All the random and the moving all went away. And that's what I liked, that sense of peace, because I didn't know, and this is what's unfortunate, right? We don't get taught tools to how to achieve that naturally
right.
until you beat yourself into the ground and get arrested and need to quit and got to go into a 12-step fellowship or a treatment center or something. We don't teach these tools. I think we probably are teaching these tools to our kids and the people around yeah. us. But these are not things that we learn as a system of society. We don't teach it to people that there is an internal world. And you can access that internal world. And you can actually have dominion over that internal world, right?
Yeah.
And we don't learn that until we get into these
right.
situations, you know? It's
right.
really unfortunate.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we get the question, can we cuss? I like that Kale put this into the... So talk about the importance of being authentic and raw with your music, especially when the songs you're telling are the story of addiction. So the reality of, you know, including that real in what you're doing instead of just only like, you know, tiptoeing what the world needs
right.
now.
Kumbaya type of
love,
stuff. Right. Well, like we spoke a little bit earlier. So, you know, I've been doing music since 98. And when you fail miserably at all of it, and it, like Jonathan said, at the end of the rope, you know, like, all right, I'm going to give it up, this and the other thing. And then I get into recovery, and I hear I hear Macklemore with that Starting Over. And I heard him, how he spoke to the girl who had 9 months, and that she's so grateful, and he only had 24 hours, you know, treated like he's some wise monk. Like, I felt that with what I was saying, with relapsing after those 3 years. I mean, it brought me to tears. And I was like, that's what I want to do. If I'm to use the gift that God gave me, I'm running with that. I want whatever he just did, whatever sorcery he just did to yeah. trip an emotional reaction out of me on something good and that I felt, I wanted to figure out how to do that and
yeah.
begin the whole process of rap and yeah. recovery.
But what makes you decide that, okay, this has got to be real? Like, we got to talk about it in a real way.
So Jonathan and I have that raw backstory, some of what we were just talking about between with the fathers, like, you know, and if I, but I also said I couldn't do what Macklemore does. Our styles, right. I could never come soft like that. Like, you know, we listen to all hard rap, rock, and live in that life at the same time. How could I possibly, you know what I'm saying? So what I have to do is convey authentic. You know, there are artists out there that do like kind of emo or whatever, like that's their, so I'm not gonna paint something with flowers and sunshine because I didn't live that.
Yeah.
I lived, you know, my mother was a mule for a biker gang. You know what I mean? Like, and roommate getting shot up with an Uzi. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to talk about roses and sunshine. There's heavy trauma. And if someone were trying to be authentic to us and...
Yeah, if someone just came to you with all the good side of it, and they didn't like qualify in a sense, right?
Right. Well, if I didn't, God gave me that trauma. Right. God tailor fitted every bit of my trauma to do what I'm doing, to bring Jonathan and I to the Most High Show.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't get brought here. I didn't get all that trauma to get brought here to not use it.
Yeah. Right.
For good.
Yeah.
And we want to really shed a light on, you know, because even in recovery rap today, you know, like you had said, it's like it's more or less kind of on the all kumbaya side of a lot of stuff I hear anyways. And I'm not speaking anything ill about it, but we want to shed that light on the person that's still in active addiction, that's wanting to get clean. You know, that person that that thinks that he has no way out. You know what I mean? That person that that has got 3 days clean and feels like that his life is over because now he's got to try to be a better person, but all he knows is that raw deal, you know, because that's who we are, is that raw deal.
Yeah.
You know, but we're paving a new way.
Do you have anybody in mind when you're writing and when you're recording?
As far as...
a specific person who you're like, this is who I want to reach? Someone that you're projecting or imaging?
The old me.
My younger me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah. So you're writing what the younger you needed to hear.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But he just didn't have the resources.
Right. Because the younger us is still out there.
Yeah.
The younger us is still getting developed. Year after year after year, those horrors don't go away.
That's right.
I mean, unfortunately.
All right, so I like this question about a turning point in your life, like a significant turning point. And I know recovery, getting sober is one, but if you were to kind of look at it and take that out and think about what was a moment when the trajectory of your life changed completely.
Back in 2012, it was the exact date was 12/21/12, okay? And I don't know if you remember, but like the Mayan calendar was supposed to be ending, and it was like the end of the world, blah blah blah. And I, you know, like on a 3-4 day bender, and I stopping at this little general down in Belton, okay? And I'm sitting in there, and I'm like making a joke while I'm buying my drinks and everything. Like, I guess the world didn't end because it's like midnight now, you know, or 1 o'clock in the morning. And this guy just come up to me, man, this old black guy, he said, why are you worried if the world's going to end? Are you scared where you're going to go? I'm like, well, I never thought about it like that. And my man just starts, like, preaching to me right there in the middle of the store, you know. And that really kind of dropped that that bug in my ear about wanting to do better, you know, but I had no way. And then, like I said about a little bit of my story earlier, you know, with the conspiring of events, when I met my wife, you know, and then God started putting me on that path.
Yeah, but that was the seed.
That was the seed that was planted because...
Just one man randomly...
Yeah, before
spitting
that.
Spitting game to you.
Yeah.
In the middle of a Dollar General or whatever at 1 a.m.
Yeah, because before that, all I wanted to do was, like, I idolized the rap songs I listened to. I wanted, you know, idolized the drug dealers. I was I was pretty much a drug dealer myself, you know. Nickel and diamond, but I was acting like I was doing big things. You know what I mean?
I sold just enough to get high.
Right, I sold a little bit more, but it's only because I had a lower tolerance, I guess.
Right.
Or higher tolerance. But so when I met him, you know, it made me, I wanted to start doing positive music, you know, and I would make songs like, God, please, this addiction's a disease, and I don't want to grovel, but I think it's killing me, you know, and but I had no idea that I was speaking like NA literature, you know what I mean, or, you know, AA literature even, but because I had no idea that it even existed, you know, when Narcotics Anonymous, I thought that that was, you know, people narking on each other, you know what I mean, like, and getting away with it, you know, like, but yeah,
yeah, I'd say so that was a pivotal moment, and you can remember, you mean you called it up right
yeah,
away.
Yeah, like it was, to this day, like it sticks out in my
head. I love that it's speaking to the realness of life, right, and the realness of spiritual growth, right? You get the seed planted, and there's no radical change. There's no white light. There's no dove or voice from the sky.
Right.
It's just the thing, but you know when you look back, you go, no, that was whatever God is. That was an intersection there that started to shift.
Yeah.
What about for you, brother?
All right. I had been in recovery, but it changed in recovery. Like the actual turning point of my entire existence to this day was from my first sponsor and him taking me to a sweat lodge and discovering the way that I pray.
Oh.
I found God in the sweat lodge. Like, and it was one of the most surreal experiences of my life because I always knew, you know what I mean? Like all of us have those stories where there's no way we should have survived. It's impossible, right?
Yeah.
And you say, oh, there's got to be something greater, but never really cha-chinged in on it or whatever.
Yeah.
I found God in a sweat lodge, and I continued to pray that way. And the thing is, I didn't know what it meant to follow God. I didn't know what it meant to live in accordance with something greater than yourself. Like, I knew these incidents or whatever, like, were unexplainable or whatever, but, you know, like, the only reason any of this exists is because you're aware of it. And then, you know, like, the sweat lodge provided a way for me to get out of my own way, and, you know, I'm sitting there screaming, like, my first sweat lodge was on the Cherokee Reservation, and I'm like, I'm gonna fracking die. I'm gonna die. And the ceremony leader is like, well, what a beautiful way to die.
Oh, shit.
It was deep, man.
And I said, okay, this is it. This is it.
So you came to terms.
I came to terms with it.
Yeah.
And I got on the other side of it, and I thought, well, if I can get through that.
Yeah.
And the thing is, when you're in that uncomfortability, pray for someone. Get out of your own way.
Yeah.
Pray for somebody in need because there's actually somebody that won't be able to get out of their situation. The door just lifts up and you get to get out of the lodge.
Yeah.
But living that way and living around those people was absolutely, and it gave me an entire new perspective and respect for all faiths. Like, I appreciate all faiths.
Yeah.
Like, so that was a huge turning point for me.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to recovery, because God doesn't want me to throw this away.
Yeah. Well, you said something in there, which is like, I think religion does a good job of telling you what to believe, right?
Yeah.
But we need to know how to believe. Yeah. How do you actually believe?
Yeah.
And to me, the steps is the best framework I've ever been exposed to teach you how to actually be spiritual. How do you actually be human?
Right.
Really,
it's
right?
The building blocks for a fundamental life with our creator, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
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 And the guy, Bill H., my first sponsor, shout out, he lives it. He's got like 32 years clean. He's NA all day, like, and he actually applies all step work because the traditions don't just apply in the rooms. They apply to your business, your relationship.
Yeah.
And you open my mind up to that.
Like, right.
And how can you work steps in this and just the whole dynamics of recovery. It really is a how-to guide for living.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So as we're wrapping up, is there anything you feel like is unsaid that we haven't covered that you really felt like you wanted to make sure we talked about?
Just how he had mentioned about how he prays different, you know, and I'm a firm believer. Like, I'm Christian, you know, I'm a firm believer in God, and we have different ways of praying. But what we're wanting to add to this next album is the coexistence. You know what I mean? We're even making a song about coexisting because, you know, the broader the base, the higher the point.
That's
you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also want to give a shout out to when I was talking about the preacher that helped me get into the halfway house, Bradley Saxon. He runs a men's recovery center in Anderson, South Carolina called the Bridge Center.
Yeah. All right.
And I'd, like all faiths, you know, I don't care how you pray. You know, I appreciate you. I respect you. You know what I mean? As long as it's greater than yourself. I do want to give a shout out to our producer though, Busy B Productions.
Oh yeah. Busy B.
And he's, currently putting our album together, the new album together. And, you can, find him at Busy B Productions on Facebook and, or just get at us on the thing. But the Dim Halo album is coming out hopefully next summer.
Yeah.
That's what we're
shooting for. There's an album out now.
Yes.
So if you want to check out these songs, Spotify, Apple Music, all that stuff.
All major albums.
Dim Halo.
Epidemic. The album is the name Epidemic. Of the album.
Epidemic. So check that out. Stream it.
We also have a video.
Search it up
on YouTube.
And stream it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we have a video out on YouTube for the song Addicted.
Yeah.
Right now.
All right. Now, so what we usually do when we have two people in the what we call the seat of service, what you guys are in right now, is what's the message, and this would be for each of you, right? Your camera is there.
Yeah.
Your camera's there.
Okay.
So we'll do Mr. Riot first. What would you say to someone who's out there and they're considering this way of life, they're considering changing the way they live? What would you say to them?
Do it, man. Always, first and foremost, you got to believe in yourself. You know, give it all to God, to your higher power, and always make sure that you keep a good network of people around. You know, because people, places, and things—that's what destroys all of us. So basically, just keep your truth about yourself, but always keep moving one foot in front of the other. You know, this faith walk ain't no cakewalk. You know what I mean?
Like that. I love you.
I would say if you're just coming into recovery or you're thinking about coming into recovery, it's not bullshit what they're saying. It is a life second to none. And no more waking up trying to figure out what happened last night through awkward text. No more concentrating on your heartbeat to not overdose or, you know what I'm saying, to not let it explode. No more waking up in the bathtub, you know, completely soaked because they were trying to get you back up, but they had to leave because you blew out. No more of any of that. You actually have people that want something for you, not from you. And if you've been in recovery for a little bit and you're like, man, these people suck, just remember that we're all shout-out dope fiends trying to figure this thing out and that nobody's got it perfect. Nobody's going to do it right for a while. Service work is tough, but it's worth it. And if you're just coming back, picking up a white tag, welcome back. And,
love you.
Love you. Keep coming back.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you guys. Let's give a round of applause for Dim Halo for making a trip, representing Real Recovery. I want to thank our producer, Kale Steele, who also just celebrated 1 year of recovery. One more round of applause. We got Leslie on the quality control and Dylan on support. And I appreciate it. This has been the Most High Show. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening.
One moment. I apologize so much.
But
I really...
duct taping me and putting me in the back while you rap?
Yeah, I apologize. Christian, for duct taping you up and putting you in the back and barricading the door. But you guys are amazing. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I didn't want to leave the show without saying a huge thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, brother.
We love you guys.
No, we really, I know the hustle. I know the grind and what it means for you guys to drive down here and show up. And, you know, I appreciate it. And this is just the beginning of, I think, what we're going to do together.
Yeah,
so
and
awesome.
We brought our families here, you know. It's a beautiful thing because it's what we're doing in recovery is building our families up, building our friendships up.
Yeah.
So I apologize for interrupting.
No, it's all good. All right. Peace.
Peace.